physical education research. This is episode 85 and explores chapter 9 of Tony Rossi and colleagues' book, Workplace Learning in Physical Education, Emerging Teachers' Stories from the Staff Room and Beyond. This week, I'm delighted to welcome Brendan Jones as the practitioner responder, and I thank him for his considered words and for taking the time to respond. The words you hear in the response are Brendan's, but the voice is mine. I hope I do justice to his sentiment. This is an audio version of the Peppern blog that can be found at www.peprn.com. Staff Room Micropolitics. We need to see the staff room less as a place to be and more as a place to negotiate and decide who we can be. What has emerged from this series of blogs is a very real sense that new teachers are not free to simply be who they want to be. That is not to say that someone from another walk of life is free to be what they want to be, but it does leave us to question how much of ourselves is controlled and determined by the ways in which we hope, expect, and are expected to be seen. Indeed, as this blog sets out to explore, the politics of transition from non-teacher to teacher has the very real potential to either shape or reshape, or both, who beginning teachers are and will be in the future. In the context of the workplace, the micropolitical dynamics of the staff room of any school can have a significant impact on new teachers, both new to the profession and new to the school. That said, how beginning teachers negotiate the micropolitical context of the HPE staff room and how this impacts upon their lives, learning and development as beginning teachers is something we know very little about. Currently, and has been extensively reported in the media and literature, there is an expectation that a particular story of physical education pervades every school and that it is told and retold across the generations. Given the evidence provided across the 11 chapters of this book, perhaps we should more fully consider the different and individual stories that teachers live in their schools. Rossi and colleagues set out to capture the differences, diversity and complexity of beginning teachers' experience of learning to read, navigate and influence the micropolitical reality of schools. They did this by drawing on the contrastingly different experiences that two female teachers had in their first year of employment. Both worked in large departments, but while Millie was the lone female out of five teachers in her department, Sally was one of four teachers in a larger department of eight. The ultimate aim of Rossi and colleagues was to draw attention to, evoke and illustrate the complexity of beginning teachers' micropolitical experiences and learning in the staff room. Working in a department made up almost entirely of male teachers is not an easy thing to do, especially as a new teacher. This is made doubly difficult when some of your staff room colleagues are described as legendary teachers due to their considerable length of service to both the department and the story of the department. One way of surviving the initial few weeks and months is to go with the flow and not rock the boat. Yet, in the very act of playing a role that allowed her to best fit in, Millie accepted that things would be as they had always been, at least for a while. While maintaining the departmental story of physical education was at least understandable, and Millie certainly wasn't in a position to change the story, others were. In contrast, Louis, a new but experienced teacher who had arrived at the same time as Millie, but from another school, quickly positioned himself as an ideas man, prepared to voice his concerns and ideas. This blatant disrespect for the department's history, however, resulted in Louis being omitted from conversations and ridiculed by his new colleagues. The one person who could challenge the dominant and enduring story told by the legendary teachers was the head of department, but he too often chose to go with the flow. This refusal to put his foot down had, in many ways, a more detrimental effect on Millie's teaching than the stories of physical education of the old guard. Millie was forced to play the role of a conservative teacher so she could establish and safeguard the professional working conditions she desired. This meant accepting the ideas of the legendary teachers, who, while not in formal positions of authority, were nevertheless positioned powerfully and reproduced and maintained their desired working conditions through informal, non-authoritative means. By playing the newbie, she was able to get along, unlike Louis, who was afforded little respect by the rest of the department. In contrast, Sally quickly found like-minded allies in her new department. Her allies, colleagues, had all graduated in recent years from the same university degree program and with the same approach to the curriculum. The other half of the department came from other universities, and while they lacked the curriculum focus of Sally's allies, they specialised in specific sports and created a much looser group, the sports specialised group. Sally felt that the curriculum people were definitely the kind of people she was, and as a group they connected both in and out of school. Despite the different factions in the staff room, there was a collegiality that Millie had lacked. Each of the groups, curriculum and sports specialised, covered different aspects of the job of the department, but this also meant that everything got done. In fact, her position in the curriculum group and her association with their stories helped her frame the possibility of what she came to know, how she positioned herself and was positioned. In both of the scenarios, it becomes clear that the social space of the staff room significantly shaped and reshaped the beginning teacher's micropolitical learning, positioning and practices throughout their first year of teaching. Significantly, it was the stories that were allowed to be told about physical education that had the biggest impact. Where these stories were contestable, then different possibilities existed. However, when these stories were fixed, and where the interests of the powerful were the only interests that were served, then teachers had to become micropolitically literate in order to navigate and cope with their working conditions. The stories of physical education that we tell through our actions and inactions, and the way we allow them to change or fight for them to remain unchanged, have significant impact on the next generation of teachers. Those in positions of power, be these formal or informal positions, are the gatekeepers of future practice, and they need to be open to a debate about the possible futures of physical education. Saying the same, or if it ain't broke, don't fix it, is a conscious decision to be consistent. It is the decision not to roll with the times. It is fitting in and not rocking the boat, but is this the way to decide the future for new teachers? I don't think it is. Do you? Practitioner Response by Brendan Jones. Staff Room Micropolitics, Vote 1, Opportunity. Reading this blog post gave me pause to reflect on how my teaching career began and the narrative I grew up with as a teacher, and prior to that as a university student preparing to be a teacher. I certainly wasn't trained for the political machinations that occurred in staff rooms, but I'd seen enough of people to know that life and relationships are dependent on modifiable and unmodifiable factors. Modifiable factors were a challenge. Unmodifiable factors were downright frustrating. I'd started to recognise that different types of people, social leaders, rebels, conscientious academics, conformists, extroverts, introverts, fringe dwellers, and blends of each and in between, all played a role in the rich tapestry. And in the educational setting that I worked in, a government-run public education system, you often saw all of them. And it was often the luck of the draw as to how arable the land for your development as a teacher was. One group that I have to give special mention to are the legendary teachers that star in the blog post. I've seen them. Thinking now, I can still see them. I won't go into stereotypes, but they seem to have a certain look. Outwardly confident. I worked out quite quickly that they were actually very afraid. So caught up in the traditional narrative about what PE should be, they'd forgotten what it was that made PE exciting, and they overcompensated with inflexibility and routine thinking. The hardest nuts to crack when it comes to change, but they also provide a leader with the biggest rewards when they do. Spoiler alert. I'm writing this from the viewpoint of a teacher with 30 years' experience who is suggesting that some things about schools today are broken. Beginning teachers can face challenges that they have scant control over. Siloed faculties of learning, teacher-centred traditional teaching methods. Little or no impetus for change. Indeed, no perceived need for change. To decide to take on these things takes courage and involves risk. Happily, I've noticed, in Australia anyway, that more and more beginning teachers aren't universally afraid to accept the challenge in manageable chunks. It may be they see the need to prove themselves as able candidates for the scarce PE jobs around. All it seems they need are permission and support. True, leaders, not managers, there is a difference, need to be ready to provide both. Back to my story. Personally, I fell on my feet. My first head of department was, and still is, an enlightened educator and leader who ensured that his PE department ran with a finely balanced mixture of process, procedure and innovation. He supported risk takers, had student learning at the centre of his, and by extension, our practice, and accepted feedback from his colleagues. In many ways, I still aspire to be his mini-me, except I have to work at it constantly, where it seemed, and still is, to be natural for him. I do know of other people in my training cohort that had a very different experience. very similar to the Millie character. The lack of voice and influence in that situation was a constant source of frustration until they moved or gained promotion. Happily, they say, they didn't repeat the lessons they were taught. One character whose stories I would hate to walk in constantly was Louis. Someone that has made a start in teaching, being brave enough to move to a new setting, and it does take bravery, believe me, and has enough passion about his practice to take on established thinking, only to be smacked down by his legendary peers, would certainly test my commitment. An enlightened leader would have let him run with something win-win, for his own confidence and to allow the naysayers an opportunity to develop some trust in his ideas. I've been there, and I'm still there from time to time, but my faculty trust the reasons behind what I do. Largely, mostly, sometimes. I'd like to say that in tying my story and the story of the blog together, there are common threads that can help beginners overcome the perils of micropolitics, a toolkit of sorts. But in all honesty, I don't think it's that easy. It's a very contextual thing. It's easy to give advice when you're not in that situation, and you can only speak of hypotheticals about what should happen for those who don't have the power or voice to influence others, and I'm loath to do that. What's the reality? While we'd all like to be Sally and fit into a potentially productive environment, many of us will start off as Millie. But it's important to recognise that and plan for change. We need to know when the time is right to find a bit of Louis in us, though, to advocate for growth. Upsetting the status quo narrative in a school is one of the hardest things anyone can do, but doesn't mean you shouldn't try. So in concluding, how does this discussion relate to you, to your experiences? Did it make you think or consider something? I'd love to hear your thoughts and so would others, so please share at www.peprn.com. Thanks for listening and see you next week for the next Pepin podcast, where I will explore the next chapter of Rossi and colleagues' book. Acknowledgements. I would like to thank Brendan for his contribution and for taking the time to reflect on this blog. I would also like to thank Vicky Goodyear for her work behind the scene as copy editor. Her help certainly forms a vital part of the production of this podcast and in getting it out on time in an semblance of coherence. However, it is important to note that any mistakes that remain are mine. Thank you.